Maya slips on a wet floor in a grocery store and breaks her wrist. She has 2 years to sue. On the last day of that period, she files, naming the company on the sign, Franklin Grocery. 3 weeks later, she learns the store is actually operated by a sister company, Franklin Grocery Holdings. The limitations period has now run. She has sued the wrong entity, and she is out of time. Is her case dead? No. And the rule that rescues her is the most heavily tested idea in this topic. By the end of this episode, you will know exactly why Maya's amendment counts as filed on the day of her original complaint. And you will run any pleadings or Rule 11 question the same way. Here is the root. First, what counts as a pleading? And what a complaint must contain to survive a motion to dismiss? Then the answer, denials, silence, and affirmative defenses. Then, amendments, the free window, leave to amend, and relation back, where Maya's problem gets solved. And finally, Rule 11. Start with a word that traps people. Pleading is a term of art, not a label for anything you file. Rule 7A gives a closed list, and a reply to an answer makes it only if the court orders one. Quick challenge. Your opponent's answer is stuffed with new assertions. May you file a reply? Not without an order. So what must a complaint contain? Rule 8, a names 3. A short and plain statement of the grounds for jurisdiction. A short and plain statement of the claim showing entitlement to relief, and a demand for relief. Jurisdiction, claim, demand. Forget the first, and the complaint is incomplete. The middle one generates the questions. Short and plain does not mean bare bones. The facts alleged, taken as true, must make the claim plausible on its face. More than conceivable, less than likely. Courts get there in two moves. First, ignore the conclusions. Labels and threadbare recitals of a claim's elements get no assumption of truth. The defendant discriminated against me is a conclusion, not a fact. Second, assume what remains and ask whether it lets the court reasonably infer liability. Take Dev. He alleges only that Franklin Freight was negligent. Dismissible. Now change one thing. A Franklin Freight truck ran a red light at 5th and Main on June 1st and struck his car. Now it survives. Rule 8 also lets you plead alternatively and even inconsistently. A few claims demand more. Under Rule 9B, fraud and mistake need particularity. The who, what, when, where, and how. An investor who alleges only that his advisor made false statements to induce an $85,000 investment has not pleaded fraud. But malice, intent, and knowledge may be alleged generally. You cannot plead another person's inner thoughts. Now, flip sides. For each allegation, the defendant has exactly three moves. Admit it, deny it, or state a lack of knowledge sufficient to form a belief about its truth, which counts as a denial. Here is the answer rule the exam tests most. Silence admits. Under Rule 8B6, if a responsive pleading is required and you do not deny an allegation, it is deemed admitted. One exception, and only one, the amount of damages. So a company that answers a 15-paragraph complaint and skips paragraph 9, which alleged it signed the contract, has admitted signing it. And do not reach for the blanket fix. A general denial is proper only if you genuinely intend to contest every allegation, including jurisdiction. Deny everything when you know you were served, and that is not good faith. Timing, from Rule 12A. 21 days after service, 60 days on a waiver, 14 days after a denied pre-answer motion. Some defenses do not dispute your story at all. A denial says that did not happen. An affirmative defense says, even if it did, I still win. Limitations is the classic. Rule 8C requires these in the answer or they are generally waived. Res judicata, statute of frauds, assumption of risk, waiver. Use them or lose them. Which brings us to amendments. Rule 15 splits into three time frames, and most questions are really asking which one applies. Before trial, at trial, and relation back. Before trial is Rule 15A. Everyone gets one free amendment. Exactly one. If nothing has to respond to your pleading, 21 days after serving it. If a response is required, 21 days after the earlier of the answer, or a Rule 12B motion. Prea files against Columbia Motors. 10 days later, Columbia Motors serves a motion to dismiss. Her free clock now runs 21 days from that motion, and a well-drafted amended complaint can moot the motion. Miss it, and she needs written consent or the court's leave, freely given. At trial, Rule 15B lets the pleadings catch up to the proof. Try an issue nobody pleaded, without objection, and it counts as pleaded. You may move to amend even after judgment. And now relation back. Rule 15C, the exam's favorite. Back to Maya. A limitations period sets a deadline. The deadline passes. Only then do you amend. Relation back treats the amendment as filed on the date of the original pleading. Three routes. Route A, borrowed law. If the law supplying the limitations period, often state law, is itself more generous about relation back, that alone is enough. Route B, new claim, same event. An added claim relates back if it arose out of the same conduct, transaction, or occurrence already set out. Negligence over a house fire, later amended to strict products liability, same fire, same heater. Relates back. Route C, new or renamed party. Three requirements. Same occurrence, so Route B must be met. Timely notice, meaning that within the Rule 4M service period, 90 days after filing, the new party learned of the suit and is not prejudiced. And knew or should have known it would have been sued, but for a mistake about identity. Run Maya through it. Same fall, so same occurrence. Holdings, shares owners, an address, and a lawyer with the company she named, so notice inside 90 days is imputed through that shared lawyer. And Holdings should have known it was the intended target. Her amendment is timely. Now the twist. The focus is on what the new party knew, not on how careful the plaintiff was. A careless misnaming can still relate back. But a plaintiff who knew both companies existed and deliberately chose the parent made no mistake. Keep one neighbor separate. Amendments fix facts that existed when you filed. A supplemental pleading under Rule 15D covers what happened afterward and always needs the court's leave. Part 2. Rule 11. The honesty rule stacked on top. Rule 11A requires every pleading, motion, and other paper to be signed by an attorney of record or by a party with no lawyer. And here is what surprises people. Nothing has to be sworn or verified. The signature carries the certification. What does that signature promise? Presenting a paper means signing, filing, submitting, or later advocating it. You certify four things. After an inquiry, reasonable under the circumstances. Rule 11B. Memorize the four. 1. Proper purpose. Not to harass, cause unnecessary delay, or needlessly increase the cost of litigation. A lawyer filing repetitive motions to exhaust a smaller opponent's budget breaks this one. 2. Legal basis. Claims warranted by existing law or by a non-frivolous argument for extending, modifying, or reversing it. That second prong is more generous than students expect. A lawyer who candidly acknowledges adverse binding precedent, then argues it should be overruled, has not violated Rule 11. Only a frivolous position does. 3. Evidentiary basis. Facts have support now, or, if specifically flagged, will likely have support after discovery. 4. Warranted denials, backed by evidence or a reasonable lack of information. Two features to memorize. The standard is objective, not sincere belief. A lawyer pleads fraud on nothing but a phone call from his client. A quick check of public records would have shown it baseless. He does not escape by saying he believed it. A pure heart and an empty head still violates Rule 11. And you keep certifying. Not just when you sign, but every time you later advocate the position. A claim that was reasonable when filed becomes a violation if you press it after discovery guts it. Then, the sanctions machinery. Under Rule 11(c)(1), the court may impose a sanction after notice and a chance to respond. May. It is always discretionary. The target can be the attorney, the firm, or the party. Now the procedure everyone gets wrong. Rule 11(c)(2), the safe harbor. A sanctions motion must be separate from any other motion and must describe the specific conduct. Then serve it on your opponent and do not file it. They get 21 days to withdraw or correct the paper. Cure inside that window and the motion can never be filed. Marchetti serves a motion attacking a $2 million fraud count as baseless. On day 19, the plaintiff drops the claim, and the roughly $9,000 the defense spent on it is gone. The rule buys correction, not compensation. Contrast the court acting on its own under Rule 11(c)(3). It issues an order to show cause, and there is no safe harbor. What can the sanction be? Deterrence, not compensation, limited to what suffices to deter repetition. A reprimand, striking the paper, a penalty paid into court, or, on motion and only where needed to deter, the movement's reasonable fees. So a party asking for $400,000 in lost profits has misread the rule. 2 money limits. No monetary sanction against a represented party for a legal basis violation under Rule 11(b)(2). Getting the law right is the lawyer's job. And no court-initiated monetary sanction unless the show cause order issued before the claims were dismissed or settled. One last boundary, Rule 11(d). Rule 11 does not reach disclosures or discovery, meaning requests, responses, objections, and motions under Rules 26 through 37. Abusive interrogatories are a Rule 26G and Rule 37 problem. A false interrogatory answer is never a Rule 11 case. A word on authorities, because this episode is named Almost Nothing, and that is deliberate. This is a rules topic. Next-gen questions hand you a fact pattern and ask what the rule produces. They never ask for case names. You will hear the plausibility standard called the Twombly and Iqbal standard. Learn the two-step test. The names are only a label. If you keep only 3 things, keep these. Silence admits. Accept the amount of damages. Because it settles facts before the merits. One free amendment, 21 days, then leave freely given, because it fixes which time frame you are in. And, for a party change, the trio. Same occurrence, notice, mistake. Now, the traps the examiners actually set. 1. John Doe swaps. Suing a placeholder because you do not know the defendant's name is a lack of knowledge, not a mistake about identity. Naming the real driver later usually fails. 2. Adding a stranger. A defendant who never heard of the suit within 90 days cannot be dragged in late. 3. It is 90 days, not 120. Older outlines still say 120 days. They are out of date. 4. The safe harbor is only for party motions. Applying it to the court's own show cause order is the classic wrong answer. 5. Serve first, file later. A Rule 11 motion filed immediately is defective, even if the paper truly was frivolous, and it must stand alone. 6. Discovery is off-limits. Rule 26G and Rule 37, never Rule 11. 7. Treating I honestly believed it as a defense. The standard is objective, and sanctions are discretionary, so even a clear violation does not require one. Time for the quick check, and this one comes straight from the Bargo question bank. Convinced the plaintiff's complaint is frivolous, a lawyer, Hollingsworth, prepares a Rule 11 sanctions motion. On the day she files the answer, she files the sanctions motion with the court. She never serves it first and never gives the plaintiff a chance to withdraw. What is the problem with her motion? Option 1. It was filed before the court had ruled on the underlying complaint. Option 2. It was filed without first serving it and allowing 21 days to cure. Option 3. It was combined with the answer instead of being argued at trial. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 2. The safe harbor in Rule 11C2 requires the movant to serve the motion, then wait 21 days before filing. The opponent gets a chance to withdraw or correct the challenged paper. Filing immediately is procedurally defective, even if the complaint truly is frivolous. Option 1 invents a prerequisite that does not exist. You need not await a ruling on the complaint before seeking sanctions. Option 3 misstates the defect. A Rule 11 motion must indeed stand alone, which is why that option tempts you, but the fatal error is skipping the sequence. Serve first, wait 21 days, then file. There are 30 plus more questions on this topic alone, each option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. Silence admits. If a responsive pleading is required and you do not deny an allegation, it is admitted, and only the amount of damages escapes. 2. Plausibility is factual. Strip out the conclusions, then ask whether what remains lets a court infer liability. Fraud needs particularity. States of mind do not. 3. One free amendment, 21 days, then written consent or the court's leave. 4. Relation back has 3 roots, and for a party change, the trio of same occurrence, notice within 90 days, and a genuine mistake about identity, not a strategic change of heart. 5. Rule 11 turns your signature into 4 certifications, judged objectively and remade every time you advocate. Party motions get the 21-day safe harbor. The court's own show cause order does not, which is why Maya keeps her case. Next time, joinder and intervention. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE, or any bar examining authority.